Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Nathaniel Philbrick, who's out with his new book, In the Hurricane's Eye, The Genius of George Washington and the Victory at Yorktown. We all remember in school learning about the Siege of Yorktown. It was the last major land battle of the Revolutionary War, Continental Army troops and French Army troops, the surrender of Cornwallis. Nathaniel, you've been researching and teaching us about the Revolutionary War now for quite a while now, and your two previous books, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition, and now this one about Yorktown. The thing I've taken away from all of them is how much of this war was a civil war as it was a war for independence. So how did that whole aspect that you've sort of touched upon here and kind of explained to us, how did that affect or complicate things for the Continental Army?
Yeah, it complicated the entire conflict, and particularly in the South. Because the South was where the revolution devolved into a bloody civil war, where neighbor preying upon neighbor in this dog and cat fight that just was horrible. It really horrified all the American Continental officers down there. There was Nathaniel Green, the fighting Quaker from Rhode Island, who would go down in the sort of the ash heap of what was left of the Continental Army in the fall of 1780. And he just wrote back horrified at what this war was doing to the Carolinas. And so it made it very hard, but it also made it very hard for the British, because they would go into a part of the Carolinas, fight a battle, perhaps win, but then have be forced to move on, and in their wake would be left the neighbors upon neighbor fighting it out all over again. So it made it a very difficult conflict to win, much easier to lose. And what was the real genius of George Washington was realizing the only way he could win it was with the help of the French.
And before we can understand Yorktown, we have to understand the Battle of the Chesapeake. It was fought entirely by the French Navy, so really we don't read a lot about it because there weren't any American troops involved. But how did this battle set up the victory at Yorktown?
Yeah. You know, it's really the unappreciated part of what won us the American Revolution. You know, by the fall of 1780 and throughout the year of 1781, you know, Americans had pretty much turned their back on Washington's army. They were not paying the taxes required to fund it. They weren't recruiting the soldiers Washington needed, and he realized it just all came down to the French Navy, because up until this point, the British Navy, the most powerful navy in the world, had a stranglehold on the American coast, and this meant that they had the ultimate ability to move up and down the coast. This was before roads were any good, and the only way to transport an army was by water. So Washington knew that if he had the French Navy, if they could establish naval superiority just for a moment, it would provide the window that when they would enable him with a coordinated attack to win the war. And it was on August 30th, 1781, after years of trying, Washington had his dream come true when Admiral de Grasse, with 28 ships of the line, sailed up from the Caribbean and arrived at the Chesapeake. They would fight the battle of what's known as the Battle of the Chesapeake a few days later on September 5th, when a large fleet coming down from New York under the command of Admiral Graves was hoping to deliver Cornwallis at the end of his lonely point there in the Chesapeake at Yorktown. Basically the first and last time in naval history, the French would defeat the British. Graves would be forced to retire to New York for repairs, and Washington and Rochambeau, who were marching down from New York with their armies, would arrive just as de Grasse returned to the Chesapeake. Miraculously, all the pieces fell together. De Grasse achieved naval superiority. The British, the American, and French armies arrived, and the Siege of Yorktown was really a fait accompli made possible by a naval battle that I think is probably the most important naval battle in the history of the world, given its ultimate ramifications.
Well, how many troops are we talking about on both sides of the Battle of the Chesapeake?
Yeah, we're not, you know, the Battle of the Chesapeake, this is, when it comes to naval battles, you really think in terms of ships of the line, the number of ships. And these were huge ships. An average one was known as a 74, which meant it had 74 cannons. You know, that's almost 40 cannons on each side of the vessel, where it could blast away at the its rival on the other, what was known as a line of battle. And the French had 28 ships of the line. And, you know, and these each average ship of the line had between 500 and 750 men. And then there were also the frigates, the smaller vessels, the faster vessels that were used to support these. And so these were vast numbers of men, thousands of people, larger than Washington's army, with all of this artillery firepower. And so these were the most sophisticated technological achievements in the world in 18th century, these ships of the line, magnificent vessels. And they were the secret to winning the war. And after years of trying, Washington was able to see his dream of naval superiority being achieved. And we have the French to thank for it.
How did it come about that Washington recruited the French? Where did this idea come from? Was it his alone?
Well, it was really, it goes back to the Battle of Saratoga, which was fought in the fall of 1777, a great victory. Benedict Arnold, the ultimate turncoat, was a big part of it. Horatio Gates is the commanding officer. And it delivered such a stunning blow to the British that the French realized, hey, maybe we should enter this war. They weren't interested, really, in helping America as much as they were intent on beating Britain, which had humiliated them in the previous decade in the Seven Years' War. They had lost all of Canada. They had lost all sorts of portions of, you know, all over the world, and it had humiliated them. So they had set out on a program of what they called revanche, in which they completely reinvented their navy and modernized it until it was at a par with the British. And Washington, once the alliance was announced in the spring of 1778, knew he wanted desperately to have the French Navy help him. That summer in the 1778, they sailed over, but each time they tried to assist the American forces, something happened. There was a storm at one instance and another. They couldn't get into New York Harbor because their ships were too deep to get over the bar, and it wasn't until 1781, 3 years later, that it all came together. And so, you know, ultimately, this is a tribute to Washington's single-minded strategic vision and his dogged determination, because the French had their own agenda. They weren't necessarily interested in following his orders, and it was really the ultimate game of herding cats. But it went finally Washington's way, and we really do have the French Navy to thank ultimately for our becoming an independent country.
I'm chatting with Nathaniel Philbrick about his new book, In the Hurricane's Eye, about George Washington and the victory at Yorktown. The book's title, Nathaniel, presupposes something that I learned about in the book. It was these series of hurricanes in the Caribbean Sea in 1780, a year before Yorktown. I've never read anything about this before. So what is it about those hurricanes that made it an essential ingredient for the way you tell this story?
Yeah, you know, I think the hurricane is the perfect metaphor for the year of Yorktown. Oh, you know, we think of the revolution as a linear progression, but it wasn't anything but. That year was a swirling series of seemingly random events, all of which were interconnected, forces beyond any person's control, with huge centrifugal forces pulling things in opposite directions, with Washington in the center, in the hurricane's eye. And my book begins in the fall of 1780, when not one but three huge hurricanes devastated the Caribbean in October. The strongest one was known as the Great Storm of 1780. It's estimated that 22,000 people were killed in this hurricane. The island of Barbados was absolutely leveled by it. 6,000 died on that island alone. You know, we've had tragedies of hurricanes this year, but it remains the most deadly hurricane in recorded history. And it convinced the French that come the summer, and particularly the fall of the following year, they needed to get their fleet north. Otherwise, it would not be safe down there in the Caribbean. And so this was a huge motivator for the following year to do just as Washington had been praying for several years, to send a large fleet north out of the hurricane-whipped Caribbean, up to help the Americans. And so a hurricane, it was just one in a series of events, all of which had to happen for the victory at Yorktown ultimately to go our way.
Why do you think this French involvement in the Revolutionary War is basically scrubbed from anything we've taught just at a conventional wisdom level?
Yeah, well, you know what? We like to think of the Revolution as something we achieved on our own. It began with citizen farmers at Lexington and Concord in 1775, but they weren't there at the end to win this thing. Americans had pretty much given up on the war. They were unwilling to pay the taxes required to pay for Washington's army, which was starving and without the provisions and equipment it needed. And it was what Washington realized, if he had any chance of winning it, it would be with the assistance of the French. And this does not fit comfortably in the narrative of our origins. We would like to think we won this thing on our own. But I am here to tell you today that that is simply not the case. Without the assistance of the French, we would not have become an independent country. And, you know, and I think it's an important lesson because, you know, we like to think of ourselves as that superior nation that can go it alone. But, we wouldn't be a nation without the assistance of the French, and I think that sense of cooperating with other powers is essential to our future as well.
I know from talking to you, you love water, you race sailboats, you live on Nantucket. Water's relationship to the Revolutionary War is a theme throughout all of these books. And so as you narrowed down on that for a topic, was that something that just came to you one night, or how did you realize that importance of water?
Well, you know, I as you say, I'm a maritime guy, and in all my books, even my book about the Battle of Little Bighorn begins with a steamship on the Missouri River. Whether it's a river or a lake or the ocean, this was how people transported goods and large numbers of people in the 18th and 19th century before the advent of the railroad. And as a consequence, the sea in particular was absolutely important to America. You know, we think of the wilderness as the essential American entity, and with the West being that. But before there was the West, there was the sea. But I have to say, not even I realized how important the sea was to the course of the American Revolution. As Washington realized with an absolute brilliance from the very beginning, once the French entered the war, it all came down to naval superiority. And so the Revolution was won, yes, with the Siege of Yorktown, but that never would have happened without the great French victory at the Battle of the Chesapeake. And so I think you can argue that the course of the American Revolution ultimately came down to America's proximity to the sea, the ultimate wilderness that nobody can control, but it's a tribute to Washington that he saw the vision that would ultimately be realized with the French victory at the Battle of the Chesapeake.
You've tipped your hat as to what comes next here, and so can you tell me about Travels with George?
Yeah, well, you know, I've had enough of bloodshed. After 8 years of the Revolution, I just needed to move on into something, and that said, I'm still fascinated by George Washington. I really didn't see that coming either, how the depths of his personality. He's just a fascinating character. And so I've decided to sort of change it up. I also wanted to rather than spend 3 years in the archives before I could start writing, I really wanted to get out there. And when Washington became president, he realized he was leading 13 independent states that really had no sense of nationhood. So he decided to head out on a road trip and be three legs to it. He would go as far north as Portsmouth, New Hampshire, as far south as Savannah, Georgia. But he would visit all 13 states. By doing that, he would, through the sheer force of his charismatic personality, create that sense of nationhood. So my wife and I and our dog, Dora, have already gotten in the car and begun following George's travels. So this is going to be called Travels with George in Search of Washington's America. And so far we've had a lot of fun.
It's fascinating, and the new light you've shed on history is so interesting. The book is In the Hurricane's Eye, The Genius of George Washington and the Victory at Yorktown by Nathaniel Philbrick. It's available now wherever your books are sold. If you haven't read the other two, Valiant Ambition and Bunker Hill, go check those out too. And check out anything Nathaniel's written. It's always just excellent. Nathaniel, thanks for joining us to talk about this today.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.